सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै।
First section concluded with a statement by Shruti. This is a dialogue between the teacher Yamaraja and the disciple Nachiketa. And Nachiketa was very firm in his desire for knowledge. And the last sentence was stated by Shruti, meaning by the Veda. Neither by Yamaraja, just for your information, nor by Nachiketa. From this whole dialogue, Shruti says, means Veda, as the scripture says, Tasmat Nanyam Nachiketa Vrunide. Therefore, Nachiketa does not want anything else except self-knowledge. So thus, the fitness of the student was established. Yamaraja saw that here is a qualified student, most qualified to receive this knowledge. And therefore, from the second section, the teacher begins his discourse. There again we find that discourse does not begin right away with the teaching of the self, but still the teacher talks about background. Thus again in the initial part of the next section, in a way we are told what kind of thinking or what kind of analysis must have gone on in the mind of Nachiketa, the student, for him to arrive at this decision or determination. So we saw how Nachiketa was very firm in his demand and his value of self-knowledge. So what's the reason? What kind of process may have gone through his mind? So Yamaraja praises Nachiketa as to what a wonderful choice he made. Because human being is endowed with a free will, the freedom to choose, and also a responsibility to make the choice. So we have the privilege of making a choice in every situation. At the same time, a responsibility to make the choice. You have to make the choice. When you are driving, you have to reach your destination. You have to make a choice. When you come to the intersection, you make a choice. Right, left, straight, which way, or there is a fork, which way to go. Similarly, also in the life, at every step, we come across a fork. So, GPS tells you, make the right, and then slight right, and slight left, and stuff like that. So, the scripture also serves the purpose of that kind of a thing, that there are forks all along, and that there are two choices available. Life presents before every human being, every moment, two choices. So what are they? Let us read the next verse here on the page number 4, verse number 5.
Shreyascha
Preyascha
Manushyametaha Tau Sambaritya Vivinakti Dhiraha Shreyo hi dhiraha Abhiprayaso vrunite Preyo mandaha Yogakshemad vrunite.
Shreyascha Preyascha Manushyam Etaha. Etaha, these two come. Who are they? Shreyaha and Preyaha. Both of these, Eta, they approach the human being, they come. What is meant is that every moment we confront situations one after the other, and every situation presents a choice called Shreyaha and Preyaha. Simply translated as preferable and pleasurable. It's one way of translating. Preferable and pleasurable. Shreyaha, preferable. Preyaha, pleasurable. The word preyaha comes from, in fact, priya means more dear. And shreyaha means one that is more beneficial. So, something that is more beneficial to us and something that is more attractive to us. Shreya, something that is very dear to the senses, something that is attractive to the mind is one choice, and something that is healthy for the life. So, healthy and tasty or tasty. These two kind of things come before us. So, both of them are happiness. Human being wants happiness. Here Upanishad says that there are two sources of happiness. Sometimes they call it two kinds of happiness, or you can say two sources of happiness. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Vishendriya Sanyoga, Sanyoga or association of Vishaya, the sense object, indriya, sense organ. So we have been gifted with 5 organs of perception and five corresponding objects of the world. So, organ of hearing, and then corresponding object is the sound. Organ of touch, corresponding object is touch. Eyes, corresponding object is color and form. Palate, the object is taste. Nose, object is smell. So, five faculties of perception and five corresponding objects. Thus, this correspondence is there. And therefore, we experience these objects through our senses. So, every moment we gain experience. Senses also get involved. Our emotions also get involved. And our intellect makes a decision. So, in every situation, what to choose, that decision is generally or should be made by the intellect, by thinking faculty, discriminating faculty. But sometimes it is not. Sometimes my impulse, in fact, overrides my right thinking and it makes me to make a choice. So, one is called preha, something that gives me an immediate gratification. Let us say, the path of immediate gratification and path of lasting gratification. Put it this way. There is a choice which gives me immediate gratification. Like you place before me all these sweets of different, immediate gratification. I'm tempted to take them. Only yesterday, or just a few days ago, doctors told me from a blood report that you already have too much sugar within you, Swamiji, and therefore refrain from that. So then, what is healthy choice? Is to eat that kale and you know, stuff like that. That's a healthy choice. Who can eat that thing? You cannot, in fact, I cannot even masticate it. You can't chew it. What happens to it inside, you know, how can the stomach, I don't know, assimilate it. But anyway, whatever it is. So that's a healthy choice. Basically, thing is that what you like is no good for you. That's what I was told. And so all these salads and this raw stuff and sprouted mung and things, this is supposed to be a healthy choice. Absolutely bland and tasteless things. For a palate who always looks for taste, you know. So all that is, that's one choice, this healthy choice. Which does not give immediate gratification. And there is a pizza, and there is pasta, and there is, you know. So that which gives immediate gratification. It's a very crude example. But since I am confronted with it every day, morning and evening, that example just comes before me. Only the huge bowl of salad they bring, you know. Swamiji, would you like this? No, all that, I have some. No, to absolutely bland and tasteless things. Fortunately, they have what they call, what do you call it? The
dressing.
Seasoning. The seasoning, yeah. I have a generous helping, you know. You are surprised. There's as much of that seasoning as much as the salad, so that I don't taste that thing, you know. What I taste is only seasoning. Somehow to make it, you know, I mean, likable to my palate. But like this, life presents choices at every moment. To simply put in our Swamiji's words, what is what I like to do and what is right to do. What I like to do and what is right to do. Now, very often we know what is right to do also. Generally speaking, a person knows what is right to do in a given situation. And still, very often a person chooses what the person likes to do. For various reasons. Because what one likes gives immediate gratification. And what is right does not give immediate gratification. Secondly, the value of what is right may not be recognized. What is right is to speak truth. What is right is to be honest. What is convenient is to pick up something. What is convenient is to tell a white lie, you know, and save some taxes, you know, some prices, sell at higher price, make some more profit, whatever. Because there is always greed in me and that always wants more and more, and therefore very often that's what may really determine what I do. But even though I know what is right, meaning that to speak truth is the right thing, to be honest is the right thing, I may not know the value of what is right. I may not know the value. I may not know what honesty has to contribute in my life or what truthfulness has to contribute in my life. But I know very well what money has to contribute in my life. So these choices are there. And very often we know the value, but we may not know the value of value. So it is important not only to know the value, but also to know the value of value, as to how a value is valuable to me. That's why in English they say, honesty is best policy. It's a very interesting sentence. Very wise sentence. Honesty is best policy, they say. Policy is something that is for my own well-being, meaning that honesty is for your own good. By being honest, understand that you are not obliging somebody, you are obliging your own self. But that should become clear to me. Usually whenever I am honest, I feel that I am obliging other people. When I am truthful, I feel I am obliging, because being honest or truthful almost invariably calls for a certain amount of letting go or sacrifice on my part. Usually following these values involves some or the other pain. Because when I make one choice, it's something that I have to give, because two mutually excluding, and I cannot choose right away. I cannot be honest and dishonest at the same time. Therefore, for choosing to be honest, I have to give up dishonesty. But then dishonesty seems to have an evident advantage in terms of some money, in terms of some, whatever, some worldly gain, even to save my face, you know, to either to prevent some loss from occurring or to have some gain, you know, either way, dishonesty seems to be giving me immediate reward. And I know the value of that reward, whereas I do not know the value of honesty, what reward it gives me. And therefore a person is very often prompted or impelled to make the choice which gives immediate, gross, tangible reward. So there is tangible reward, as again there is an intangible reward which we do not understand, which an ordinary person does not understand. Shreyascha Prayascha Manushyam Etaha. The Shreyas, which brings about a lasting good, Prayaha, which seems to bring about an immediate gratification, they come before a human being in every situation. Tau Samparitya Vivirakti Dhiraha. Now there are two kinds of persons. One is called Dhiraha. So you look at the translation, indeed the discriminative one. Dhi means buddhi or intellect. Dhi means intellect. Dhiraha, one who possesses intellect. Meaning that one who is intelligent in the right sense. So one the wise one, one who uses intellect for discrimination for which it is meant. So dhiraha, the discriminating one. One who can weigh the pros and cons. One who can see the difference between the short-term gain and long-term pain, and short-term pain and long-term gain. These two choices are there. Something that is good, right? Something that I like, is usually that which gives immediate gratification, is that which is short-term gain, long-term pain. On the other hand, what is right to do usually involves the pain, short-term pain, but long-term gain. Dhiraha, a wise person, a discriminating person. Dhairya also means fortitude. So one who enjoys the fortitude, meaning that person gets swayed by just temptations and situations. One, on the other hand, always weighs the situation with his intellect. One who is not controlled by his impulses, but one is controlled by his intellect or discrimination or thinking faculty. And therefore he chooses. So, tau samparitya. What is samparitya? Having very clearly considered them. So both these choices come before me. A dhira, a wise or discriminating person, samparitya, samyak paritya, pari means looking at it from all sides, considering from all sides, not just looking at part of it and making a decision, but then taking into account all the sides or all the consequences of a thing. That's called dhira. Dhira means a discriminating person. You can call it even a wise person. Well, wise in this sense, not wise. Right now he's not yet wise as far as the self-knowledge is concerned. But wise as far as what is right conduct and what is the right choices. So in every situation there is one person who considers a given both the choices from all the sides. Vivirakti dhiraha. And he makes a choice. Shreyohi dhiraha avipriyaso vrunite. This dhiraha, the wise person, shreyaha vrunite, he chooses shreyaha, that which gives the long-term good, that which brings about the long-term gain, even though it may involve a short-term pain. Preyo mando yoga kshema vrunite. Manda, a dull person. So see, manda, an indiscriminating one. Spiritually dull-headed person, that may be a very smart fellow in the world. So the worldly sense is one thing and spiritual sense is a different thing. That person can be worldly wise and pretty smart, but he can be quite stupid. By spiritual I mean in terms of what the real benefit is. So here is this fellow called Mandaha. Manda means slow, dull-witted. In the sense that one who does not take his time, who doesn't tell the kind of discrimination to consider the consequences of the choices and who makes a choice as his impulse is telling. So, yoga kshema dronite. Yoga and kshema. What is yoga? Gaining what I do not have is called yoga. And kshema, protecting what I have. So, these are the immediate concerns that everybody has. Gaining, or acquiring, or seeking, or making an effort to acquire what I don't have. And once you get something, then protection also becomes a problem. Like living in New York City, for example, you get a new car, it's a big problem. They don't have garages, you park on the street and they change here and there. And, you know. And then also, you have to be watchful. Because somebody can simply take away everything. When they take away battery, they take away all sorts of things the New Yorkers can do. So when I was visiting a friend and this person, you know, every 5 minutes, 10 minutes would go and peep out. So what's happening? What are you looking? So I'm just watching my car, you know, is it still safe or not? So it's just fifth floor looking at the street, you know, where the car was parked. Because protecting what you have also is a big deal, I tell you. It's not simple. Everybody talks about retirement. So retirement is all right, but you know something, we keep on continuing work for what? For health insurance. Such a big deal, the health insurance seems such a big deal that people drag on and on with their thing, you know, for health insurance. Protecting the health, you know, what you have to protect also is very important and also requires a lot of effort. The idea is that not only gaining what we do not have requires effort, because nothing comes free. There's no free lunch. And therefore, it requires a lot of effort to achieve what we want. Having gained that, then to protect it. At one point, Shankaracharya says, Putradavi dhanabhajam bhitihi. The wealthy person has fear from his own son. Because when you get this wealth, then you become more and more suspicious. And why is this fellow, why does he come to me? I never showed up before. He has started, coming to me. What's the reason? You start wondering about this, the intentions of people, become very suspicious because you're afraid that he may have his eyes on your money. So this protecting what we have. This person didn't he live in an apartment and was okay, and attending our classes and everything. Then this one, we have built a new home. Very good, congratulations. Except he stopped asking him coming to classes. So what happened? So we have to take care of the home now. So he builds a home and he gets built into the home, That's what happened. Because protection is important. Swami, you don't know. I said, I do not know. But that's true. Because my 401k is all right, but then where is it invested and what is it, what kind of returns are given, where are they investing in? And this is all the time, this kind of mutual fund, this fund, that fund, so you pay attention to all this stuff, Swamiji. And they were looking at the stock prices every day and look at this price and all that, I'm checking with your accountant and where are we and what are we doing and this. Nothing, I'm not saying one should not do. All I'm saying is that all of this, requires time and energy which you could otherwise spend in. We don't have time, and I understand, these compulsions people have. This retreat is announced 1 year in advance, But still, Swami, Friday I could only come and Saturday I have to go and Sunday, this upon. Even this 2.5 days, you can't plan. Because there are things that this Swami, it's not like you, Next year dates for evening talks are all announced, but Swami, what can my grandson came, and my six and my son came, my daughter came, somebody came. So let him come. No, but they came, but I must be there. Bring them here. No, that can't. Look, I can't do that. We give them some solutions, Guest here. Bring the guest here. No. No, Swami, the guest won't come. It's very interesting. But so, protecting what we have, this is all samsara, no doubt about that. But this yoga and kshema. Yoga, acquiring what I do not have. That involves a lot of effort and stress and tension and conflict and competition and whatever. And then having gotten it, you think that you get to be president of the United States just like that? It's very grueling exercise for 2 years, it's for a morning. How many thousands of miles they must have traveled, how many rallies they must have done, how much energy they have, these people, is just amazing. Where do they get that energy? Those who became president right away, how to get re-elected? So you're protecting your position again. So all things that you do, what happens to America, God alone knows. What happens to the world, nobody knows. America is first. But whether America's interest is served or not, my interest is bound. I am first. I must get re-elected. And my constituency, this is called yoga and kshema. This is kshema. Kshema means protecting what I have. It requires the same effort or even more effort. So this is called mandaha. For a person for whom this is the agenda. Person thinks that this is what life is meant for. Because my mind keeps on coming with a variety of desires and therefore, what is life? Fulfilling my desires. What is desire? Acquiring what I don't have. Then whether you like it or not, naturally what you have has to be protected and therefore, yoga and kshema, this takes a whole life. But then that most people think that is life, Swamiji. What else do you have to do? So this person, this thing keeps a person so occupied that there can be something else in life, says here the Upanishad. The Sampraya Pratipati Balam Pramadyantam Vittamohenam Gunam Ayam Loka Nasti Paretimani. That this narrow-minded person, or this you can, whatever you want to call him, Dhimandaha, non-discriminating person, think this is what life is all about. That you have my, that all these organs are there, there is this objects of pleasure, there is this comfort and pleasure, that's the goal of life. Artha and Kama is the goal of life. Artha means, comfort, and Kama means pleasure. Says here, Kathopanishad, na sampraya pratibhagi balam. Then the life can have something else to offer. It never occurs to these people. Why is it so? Pramadyantam. Because he fails to see the obvious thing in life with the moheram gudam. Because his mind is highly preoccupied with what to get next and how to protect what I have. Not realizing that this can consume you completely and that life can have something else to offer. That there is another goal in life. It never occurs to this person. So Yamaraja talks about this quite elaborately to praise Nachiketa, that you are not like that. So this contrast is given here not so much to condemn somebody, there is a lot of condemnation following this also about people are non-discriminating. But there is no point in talking about that because they will never read this. Thing is, they're not going to listen to that anyway. Lord Krishna also talks about sometimes out of, his intolerance, and he says, so many things he says, this stupid fellow, this fellow, those fellow. Why are you saying that? It's just to encourage Arjuna and to praise him that, look, you are not like that. Because those fellows are condemned, they should listen to Gita really, then they should know what they are missing. But then that's never going to happen. So, pramadyantam. What is pramada? Pramada means doing something other than what you should be doing. Alasya means laziness, not doing what you know you should do. It's called laziness. You know what should be done, should not do. You are not doing. What is pramada? You are very busy. Busy doing something other than what you should be doing. So, our Swami used to give us an example, maybe in Hawaii someplace, somebody must have taken him to some kind of a zoo or what, it was some kind of a exhibition or something. And there, it seems right in the beginning of itself, there was some kind of machine, a robot, which could do all kinds of motion that a human being does. It's a little like hands and this motions, and then you put a dollar and then things start. And then hands it as it does, and legs it as it does. All kinds of things it does, like a human being would do. That'll go on for the whole 1 minute. So, Swamiji being what he is, he observed that thing. Now, his mind works in a funny way. This was meant to show you how the machine works, look. He says, what did it achieve? He says, after doing all this stuff, what did it achieve? All these motions of hands and legs and this and that, what is the outcome? Nothing. So this is called pramada. Fellow is very busy doing nothing, doing a lot of things. At least that machine did not achieve anything, but here this fellow is doing damage to himself. That's the problem. Because when we do things that are wrong, then what happens is it leaves in us the impression of again doing wrong, and therefore there is likelihood that my mind will automatically repeat that because I am creating in my mind some patterns of thinking and choices. And more choices of that kind I make, then a time comes and without thinking I will do it habitually. And therefore, doing what is not right, not only has immediate consequences, but also has long-term consequences of creating the habit in me. Just like a person starts with one cup of tea and then a second cup of tea and then you get addicted to that, becomes a habit. So these two persons are contrasted here. It's called mandaha, a non-discriminating person. Meaning only in a spiritual sense, world-wise this fellow may be pretty smart. And he thinks he's getting away with things. He thinks that he's successful also by the world. But then, in fact, he is wasting a very precious opportunity that the life provides. This human embodiment is not meant for pleasure and comfort. It's not meant for simply spending away in sensuous gratification. It's not meant for that. If sensuous gratification was meant to be the goal of life, then our stomach should be more like that of a buffalo. You know, you can keep eating. It's not like this. You eat a little bit and then all kinds of problems come into the stomach. But as Swami used to call a buffalo, you know what? Stomach walking on four legs. You know? In short, other creatures are much more competent in having sense gratification than what human being is. If you look at the human being's whole makeup, it is very clear that this equipment is not made for sense gratification, because by doing that we keep on damaging it. It has a different purpose. All other animals, they all grow in horizontal directions, and so their brain and their stomach and then all sense organs are in one line. Therefore, the brain is generally used for filling up stomach and sense gratification. That's how they're designed. But human being grows vertically, and he has his intellect in the highest place. He also has stomach, also has sense organs, but they have a secondary place. Primarily, intellect is meant to grow up. And so a person who simply takes sense away his life merely in fulfilling demands of sense gratification is called manda here, because he just cannot think. Which is again presented only in contrast to Shreya, the person who is called dhiraha, person who is discriminating, who examines things from all the sides and realizes that there is just an immediate gain in doing what I like to do, that there is an immediate gratification, but then he also understands what loss is involved, what long-term loss is involved in this short-term gratification. So Shreya and Preya, what I like to do and what is right to do. What I like to do means that my doing is dictated by my likes and dislikes. So person who acts as swayed by or prompted by the likes and dislikes, and a person who does not submit himself to the impulse of likes and dislikes, but he subdues them and does what he... Because for doing what is right, it is necessary to subdue my impulse of doing what I like. In every situation, what I like will of course make itself, you know, evident to me and will want to control me. At every moment, both these forces want to control me. My raga dvesha on one hand, and my discrimination on the other hand. But he is called dhira, a discriminating person, who always makes the right choice and not submit himself to the forces of raga and dvesha, likes and dislikes, or attachments and aversions. Why is this being told to Nachiketa? So that's what Yamaraja says. Thus there are two paths in life, dura mete viparitre vishuchi avidyaya shavidyeti jnata. He Nachiketa, there are two paths, path of ignorance and path of knowledge. Path of ignorance or path of aviveka, path of non-discrimination, an unintelligent way of living and an intelligent way of living. It says, Nachiketa, you are the intelligent person. Vidya Bhivsiram Nachiketa Sammanye. Hey Nachiketa, I consider you as very fit for Vidya, the knowledge, because you are not swayed by all the temptations that are presented in your life. Meaning that life presents temptations. That is the nature of things. So when we want to make the right choices, then we are tested. Then that choice becomes more and more expensive. The right choice becomes more and more expensive for me, for somebody is testing me, how much price this fellow is willing to pay. As in case of Nachiketa also, the choice becomes more and more expensive. In terms that more and more temptations are placed in his, on his path, to see how much willing sacrifice, or how much vairagya, how much detachment he has. So, Nachiketa is an example. Similarly also, every spiritual seeker is going to be tested. Then there are going to be choices like this, and then we tested what is important for us. Yesterday somebody was asking, you know, one of the questions is, somebody, how do we, what do we do for the spiritual life? This is the center, and your life goes around that. So we will choose a goal and make all choices which are conducive to that goal. There are always going to be pressures, compulsions, temptations. It's okay, so next time we'll do it, all right. Sorry, next year I'll definitely come. Next year I'll do this. Next time I'll do that, etc. So that is how it happens. I'm not talking about the retreat. I'm talking about the day-to-day business. Oh, today I think this is a football game, you know, or basketball game, this game. Oh, it's a very critical game, so I mean, always temptation full. In fact, as we are proceeding with our life, this world keeps on simply bombarding us with all kinds of temptations. You open anything, and immediately something pops up. You open your email, you know, something pops up there, you know. They know exactly what you like. Somehow they seem to know that. So you are reading, they know what kind of articles you like, so they will pop up. Or what kind of background you have, so that thing will pop up, some sales thing. So, meaning that the world is determined to trap you, to tempt you, to control you, because it is in their interest. Then only their business will go, not otherwise. Meaning that as the time goes, it becomes more and more difficult to be determined to be devoted to our right choices. So, but Nachiketa did. All possible temptations were placed on his path. Hey Nachiketa, at one point the Yamaraja says that you are even better than me. When I was at your point, I was tempted a little bit. What's the reason why he has become the Lord of Death? Why does he have to do this? Because he's appointed to do that. That's a technical thing. But the point is, Swami, if Yamaraja is a wise person, then why is he there? Why is he born? Sometimes a wise person also is born again. Usually, moksha means end of the cycle of birth and death. But some people are born again. Not that born again Christian comes to born again, that they will take birth. They may, you know why? Because they have some very special powers. And God wants them to be born to do His job. I mean, some people are thus in fact appointed, it's called adhikari, to do special things. And so, there are cases like this where we see that some sages are rebirth of even a wise person. One was wise person in previous birth. So, this Yamaraja is one of those. No reason for him to be born. But why is he born? That is because he performs some very special rituals and meditations and things like that and acquires special powers. So you need special powers to do special things. And therefore, even though he is wise and for he has no agenda of his own, on account of the kind of the abilities that he possesses, Ishvara has an agenda for him. Therefore, he is made to be born again to fulfill Ishvara's purpose. So Ramaraja is one of those. And so he is given this job. What job? Pulling people's life, you know. So Yamaraja says to Nachiketa, look, when I was like you, I made at one point, I got tempted by performing these rituals and this thing, and therefore, and now I wound up with having to take a birth to fulfill Ishvara's agenda. You have just simply rejected everything. So at one point, look at the generosity of the teacher here, that not only praises the disciple, but even says that you are even better than him. Who will say that? And his own faces implies, says, Tvadrum Bhuyan Nachiketah Prashta. Here, Nachiketa, I wish that I had questioners like you. So all this section is meant for basically when we are praising Nachiketa, to praise his desire for knowledge, his determination, to praise the dispassion that he has demonstrated, so that we know what we have to do. I mean, this is in the by making Nachiketa an object of praise. In fact, the Upanishad is telling us what it is that we should be doing, how these temptations come. I have told you this story that when we went to Bombay for our study so many years ago with our Pooja Swamiji, and then some people were coming from United States also. I also went from here, and then somebody was coming from this place. I won't mention it. But then, so we were waiting for them, and that person did not turn up. What happened? It happened that on the night, so this person was to leave for India next morning. The previous night, she got married. So Maya comes in some way. Okay, this is called, Maya means, you know, this is called tempted. These things are there. These things come in your life. This has happened, I mean, you know. And so, not that it was right, wrong. I'm not saying that this was the wrong thing to do or anything. What I'm saying is that, these devatas do not like, you know, that you make these choices, and therefore they may not put obstacles, the temptations can come. And Nachiketa did not fall for anything. So what kind of determination is required? In a way, this tells us, you know, the journey of a spiritual seeker and what kind of things we come across and what choices we have to make and what determination is required, what values are required. Having said all that, now still Yamaraja takes a little more time before talking about Brahma Vidya. In between, Upanishad tells us that Nachiketa refined his question, by the way. Nachiketa refined his question. From all this, the discourse of Yamaraja, slowly Nachiketa understood exactly what it is that Yamaraja is talking about. And so he asks a question of Yamaraja, which we will not reproduce here. That please tell me about that. Anyatra dharmat, anyatra dharmat, anyatra asmat, kruta kruta, anyatra bhutacha bhavyacha, yattad vedyasi tadvada. Says that truth which is beyond dharma and adharma, which transcends dharma and adharma, which transcends cause and effect, which transcends past and present and future, yattat pashyasi, which I know that you see that. So he says, the truth that you see, I see that you see, what truth? That which is beyond dharma and adharma. Right and wrong, beyond cause and effect, beyond past and present and future, which you see, you please tell me about that. So then question is, Nachiketa is asking another question or what? He's not giving, he's asking only three boons. You're taking advantage of this teacher or what? You know, when you find that he's favorable to you, then you slowly push your other agenda. Now, Nachiketa is quite capable of doing it. But then, The commentators have explained that this is not really a different question. This is clarifying exactly what it is that he wants to know. He has understood that the self that he wants to know is something that transcends everything. So, what is this truth? He says, anyatra dharmat adharmacha, which transcends both dharma and adharma, what is right and wrong, which is righteous and unrighteous. Meaning that satyam or ultimate reality cannot even be called dharma. Cannot be called, why dharma? Cannot even be called right. As we understand, what is right? The right that we understand is something that is opposed to wrong. What is dharma? Dharma is that which is opposed to adharma. Then God, call it truth, call it God, call it Atma, Self. What is His nature? His nature is righteousness. His nature is truthfulness. His nature is goodness. Goodness, yes, but not the goodness that is opposed to evil. Righteousness, yet, but not the righteousness opposed to unrighteousness. Truthfulness, yes, but not the truthfulness opposed to untruthfulness. That's what Vedanta teaches. It is not that God is opposed to Satan or something, you know, where Satan is God is not. God is not opposed to that. So Vedanta does not teach about God who is opposed to something. But after all, both are creations. And therefore, what is the truth which sustains everything? That is why, if you take any devata, like Lord Shiva for example, those who are familiar with that, with the picture of Lord Shiva, he sustains the pairs of opposites. On one hand, he has this moon, this showering nectar. On the other hand, is poison in his neck. He has this Ganges emerging from his matted lock, which is the embodiment of purity. And he also wears a garland of skull, which is the most impure thing. So, if you look at this Lord Shiva's picture, we find that the two things that are totally opposed to each other, both of them is wearing. Meaning what? He is not opposed to any of them. For him, poison also is okay. Nectar also is okay. Skull also is okay. Ganges also is okay. Half of his body is occupied by his consort Parvati. That also is okay. And he smears this ashes on his body. You smear the ashes, then you find out it's very irritating, burning. It's not something very pleasant. So that on one hand, and Parvati on the other hand. Meaning that he is the locus of all pairs of opposites. Meaning that he is not opposed to anything. Truth cannot be opposed to anything. What truth? Absolute truth. So truth that is opposed to false is what we call relative truth. That's called vyavaharika satta. That is in the objective reality. But what we call paramarthika satta, all that is transcendental, the absolute reality, is not opposed to anything. Everything goes. Dharma is okay, adharma also is alright. See, that is why we have two pictures of God. There is this Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, who is a protector. One picture is, he is quietly lying down in his serpent bed, in the midst of the ocean, in his half sleep, yoga nidra. He is supposed to be protector of the world, and all kinds of stuff is happening here on the earth. There are all kinds of demons and rakshasas and, you know, creating so much torture and so much havoc. And sleeping. That means what? It's always all right for him. So then what you need to do? These devatas go to him and pray to him. That, look, Lord, what is happening in the earth? All these demons are creating havoc. It has become impossible for the righteous people to live now. Do something. He says, okay, then divine voice comes, that I will take incarnation. So then that God, Lord, becomes incarnated as Krishna or Rama or somebody, and then he is opposed to the demons. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya. Lord Krishna says that my role is to protect the good and destroy the wicked. In that role, he doesn't destroy anybody. You know, he's not unopposed. So that represents absolute reality. Then only when it becomes his relative reality, then only he can be opposed. So first, of course, we have to Swami. That's good. Thank you. You told us that. Because there's no point in following dharma. After all, you have to transcend that stuff, you know. What's the use of dharma and righteousness? Why are you talking about these values? Because they all transcend everything. That's what Mahabharata says. Teja dharma adharmam cha. Ube satyanrute teja. Ube satyanrute tyaktva. Yena te says, the teacher says to the disciple. The teacher, his father also says to his disciple's son. Teja dharmam adharmam cha. You have dharma and adharma. Give up both. Obey satyanrute teja. Give up both truth and false. Give up both of them. Having given up all that, then still something remains to be given up. Give up the giver up. Obey satyanrute tektva yena tejasi. You give up that by which you are giving up, meaning that giver up also should be given up. This giver up fellow is opposed, but then ultimately what is meant by transcending, meaning that you are unopposed to anything. That is why we are taught the value of compassion. That a compassionate person is not even opposed to a cruel person. Values that we are taught is to transcend these pairs of opposites. It's one thing to have the paksha or the side of truthfulness and fight with the evil. It's also okay. But ultimately one has to have a value where even that evil, you can accommodate even that also. So we are taught values ultimately to transcend both these pairs of opposites. To accommodate. Accommodating even Swamiji says, accommodate. You know, after all, nobody is perfect. Imperfections everywhere. The blemishes are everywhere. Defects are everywhere. So become large-hearted. Then only you can know the truth that accommodates everything. Because ultimate truth accommodates everything, isn't it? He's like, he has created everything. I mean, after all, the demons, who has created? He himself created. Why are they there in the first place? Because everybody has a place. Everything is required for running this universe. So, Nachiketa asks for that truth, which transcends the time, which transcends the place, which transcends the right and wrong. Please teach me that. That happens to be, you know, called Brahman. That's called God. And where is that God? Where is it, God that transcends everything? Where is he? He is up there. Where is he? Vedanta teaches that it is your own self. So that is how the self has to be known. And therefore this background is given. That Nachiketa refined this question. Not that it asks another question. Otherwise, Yamaraj says, wait a minute, that's not in our contract. But this one is pretty clever. That no, this I'm within the contract when I'm asking this question. And so Yamaraj did not object to that. And then proceeded to, now, with the tea. But then one more step comes before he actually starts teaching, giving the knowledge of self. We'll look at that in the next class. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Balarayanam Sutra Bhashya Krutau Vande Bhagavantau Punah Punah Ishvaro Gururatmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadvyapta Dehaya Dakshinamurtaye